Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Nelson Warr, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in over 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website at hinckley.utah.edu for more information. Today's guest is Ricardo Romero. He's a Peruvian trade representative. Mr. Ricardo Romero Tallero is currently Peru's trade representative on the west coast of the United States. Mr. Romero has the responsibility to lead Peru's strategy and efforts in the western states to maximize the benefits of the recently enacted trade promotion agreement signed between Peru and the United States. He is also a columnist of Expresso, a prominent Peruvian newspaper, where he has a weekly column, Brújula Comercial, since 2003. Mr. Romero was chairman and CEO of Trading Consult, a consulting firm that he founded in 2003 that provides advisory services to businesses and public institutions on issues related to strategic planning, project formulation, and foreign trade issues on a global basis. From 2007 to 2008, he was strategic advisor for business development of PricewaterhouseCoopers, and from 2002 to 2003 served as executive director of PromPeru, Peru's export promotion agency. He also served as chief executive officer of COMEX Peru, Peru's leading trade business organization from 2001 to 2002. As appointee by three presidents, Mr. Romero formerly served as alternate representative of the APEC Business Advisory Council from 1999 to 2004. As Peruvian representative to ABAC, interacted with the heads of state of the 21 member economies, as well as with ministers of trade and Fortune Global 500 corporate leaders to discuss and propose policy changes to facilitate trade and investment liberalization in the Asia-Pacific region, according to WTO trade regulations. He had the responsibility to represent and defend Peru's national priorities and interests through permanent lobbying and public relations work. Mr. Romero has studies of law from the Universidad Complutense of Madrid, Spain. He was also educated at Chapman University, Houghton College, American University, and the London School of Economics and Political Science. He has a BA in Political Science and International Economics and an MSc in Management. And recently, Mr. Romero has completed a program on trade policy at the Harvard University John F. Kennedy School of Government. Please join me in welcoming our guest.
Thank you for having me this morning. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the Hinckley Institute for this generous invitation. What I'm going to do this morning, I'm going to share with you a story about a country in South America that in the 1980s went through a civil war because of the terrorism we encountered for over 12 years during the 1980s and part of the 1990s. I think it is a success story. You'll see by the numbers I'm going to show you. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the economy, talk to you about what's been going on with investment growth in Peru. I'm going to mention market access and the trade agreement between Peru and the United States. And finally, I will give you some idea of what Peru exports to the world. To begin with, I want to show you this graph. As you can see, I think this is a pretty amazing picture of what has happened with Peru in the last 7 years. Peru has been the fourth largest growth among the emerging economies around the world. and together with India and China, which I think is very impressive. I think that gives you a pretty good idea of what has been going on. So in order to understand the growth that Peru has experienced during all these years, you have to compare it with other countries. And if we compare Peru with the most important economies in Latin America, you also see that in 12 years, Peru has 10 years experienced a growth average of 6.4% of GDP, higher than any these other countries, like Chile, for example. Chile has always been, for the last 20 years, a good example of economic growth in the region. But I guess we've been doing better than they have, in the last 7 years or so. The growth in 2012 was 6.3%, was above what was forecasted by international organizations like the IMF, the World Bank, and prestigious investment banks. Again, if you compare the growth with the rest of Latin America, we were right above highest in the region as well. And with inflation, the lowest inflation in the region as well, 2.6%. Now, these are the projections of growth for Peru up to 2016, with an average growth of 6% of GDP, which is also a very good sign of how healthy the economy is. And how this has been possible? By two main pillars, investment and trade, exports, Peruvian exports. If you look at the first graph in 2012, Peru's gross fixed investment was 26.8% as a percentage of GDP, the highest percentage compared with the rest of Latin American countries, which is another sign of how healthy the economy is. Another point, important point, is that 21.4% of that GDP percent is private investment. So that tells you that it's the private investment that is driving the growth of the economy in Peru. This graph is very important. If you want to know how well a country is doing, besides looking at the GDP growth, you got to look at what they're buying from the rest of the world. The imports of capital goods in 12 years have gone up 6 times, which I think is very impressive. That tells you what Peru is doing, how Peru is doing, how Peru is growing. You need capital goods for development, for the development of your manufacturing industry. So, and that's what we've been buying from the rest of the world. Now, exports. As you can see, in 2000, we exported $6.9 billion, and 12 years later, we are up to $45.3 billion. What is in red, of course, are pretty much commodities, and in gray is value-added products. And if you look at the curve of the value-added products, it's been positive, except for 2009, which was right after the financial crisis. But that was the very first effect of the financial crisis. The interesting thing about this is that Peru cannot continue its growth based on commodities. We have to change. And one indicator that it will give you an idea of what we're doing is this number. We keep going up in exporting value-added products. So it is a priority for the country today to industrialize our economy. We need to, like I said, we need to provide more value-added to our products, because that will allow us to generate more employment as well in the country. So that's the priority today. You should know that, I don't know if you can see these numbers, but 13.3% of Peruvian exports to the world go to the United States. Out of that, those exports, 23% of those exports are manufactured products to Peru. the United States is no longer the number one trading partners, number two. Now China is the number one. But the difference is here is that China buys 95% of the products that China buys are minerals, raw materials. Only 5% are value added. The United States buys 23% of the total. So the U.S. continues to be the most important market for Peru when it comes to manufacturing products. Okay, so I told you a little bit about the GDP growth, investment, exports, but what has been the result in terms of social indicators in Peru? If you look at 2004, we had poverty as a population in percentage of 58.7%, and 7 years later, it dropped to 27.8%. I think that's a very impressive reduction of poverty in only 7 years. And if you compare that reduction with other countries in Latin America, Peru has been able to be the country that has reduced poverty the most in the region. You know, and that is this is a direct result of the continuous growth that Peru has been experiencing for the last few years. Another effect of this growth has been a more adequate employment and the decentralization of the country. Before, a few years back, Peru, there was a saying that Lima is Peru and Peru is Lima. That's not the true anymore. Now you have an expansion outside Lima, which is the capital of the country. If you could look at this graph, you will see there's more employment outside Lima, which is good. We need growth outside the capital. We need, especially considering that the highest levels of poverty are outside Lima, especially in rural areas. But now we look at the underemployment. We were in 2002, 60% and we are down to 41% in 2012, and adequate employment went from 40% in 2002 to almost 60% in 2012. That's another direct effect of the growth experiences Peru has had in the last few years. Then the middle class. You cannot have a stable economy if you don't have a strong middle class. The middle class has been growing. If you look at households that spend less than $10 a day, it was 32% in 2004, and in 2011 dropped to only 14%. That's another important indicator about the purchasing power of Peruvians. You know, now Peruvians have more ability to buy goods. And I think this map will give you, I don't know if you can see it very well, but this is Lima. This is the capital of Peru. This is 12 years ago. Most of the retail businesses were concentrated in Lima. And now, 12 years later, this is the map of retail sales in the rest of Peru. What has happened is because of all this growth, because this reduction of poverty, because of this increase of purchasing power, of course, retailers see a real business outside the capital. So you have brands like McDonald's, any other brands from Europe, from Peru, from Chile, from different international franchises. They're everywhere now in Peru. And I think this graph, I don't know if you can see it really well, but not so much. But, okay, well, this is a map of Peru. And I think this is, for us, a great evidence of what's going on in the country. And I think it's pretty healthy because you cannot have a sustainable growth in time if you don't see that this growth and this wealth and this success is shared with the rest of the country. You know, I think one of the most important things that we must accomplish is to ensure that most Peruvians improve the quality of life. Let me talk to you a little bit about investment. Of course, when an investor looks into a country as a possibility to put their money in, They not only look at the monetary or fiscal policy or macroeconomic policies, they look at other factors, you know. In Peru, because of its success in the last few years, you know, Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's, which are the main agencies that provide investment grade. Peru is at the same level that Brazil is, and pretty much the same level that Chile, Mexico is. Chile remains to be, continues to be the most stable country for investment in the region because they've been doing this for 30 years. We've only been doing this for 10. So I think for being only 10 years, I think it's pretty impressive what we've been able to accomplish. When it comes to countries as a priority destination for foreign direct investment, Peru was in position number 21. Now we're 16. We improved 5 positions, which is pretty good. You know, Brazil dropped 1, and Chile continues, you know, to be the same between 2011 and 2010. And this is the kind of information that investors look for when they consider a country to put their money in. Another indicator that is very important and reflects how healthy the economy is the net international reserves. We started in 2003 with $10.2 billion. In 2012, we reached $60.2 billion. Those numbers are from October of 2012. But as January 31st of this year, the international reserves reached $67 billion. And our reserves as a percent of GDP, we have the highest level in Latin America, which is 28%. That's a very, very important indicator for to know how healthy the economy is. Of course, another component of the decision-making when a company explores the possibility to invest in a country is how do I ensure that my investments are protected? And so what Peru has done and continues to do is to sign investment agreements. And some are just bilateral investment agreements, and in some other instances, like the United States, you sign a trade agreement. And in the case of the U.S., it's called the Trade Promotion Agreement. Chapter 12 is the chapter that was dedicated to investment. And in that chapter is the legal framework that allows the protection of U.S. investments in Peru and vice versa. Doing business in Peru, it's an analysis the World Bank does every year. And according to the results of 2012, Peru is the second most attractive country for doing business in the region, which is pretty impressive. And in terms of investment, Forbes magazine analyzes many countries around the world for doing investments. And Peru, again, is number 2, right after Chile, to be more attractive for investment. So these are 2 very reputable organizations that are telling investors, you know, these countries are serious, these countries have the appropriate legal framework that would enable you to invest. Of course, investors also look for incentives. You know, what do I get if I invest in your country? You know, we have, of course, tax incentives. As I said, they also want to make sure that the investors are protected. And we not only sign bilateral agreements, but we also part of the ICSID or the MIGA from the World Bank, international agreements which protect investment. So if you have a dispute with a company, you go to this court, international court, and you settle those issues in this international court. So we abide by international law and the protection of investment. Another important change that happened in the last 20 years is that in the past, foreign investors and Peruvian investors were not treated the same way. You know, Peruvian investors had more advantages, not anymore. Today, the law treats foreign investors and domestic investors the same way. Everyone is equal to the law when it comes to investment, which is a pretty important sign for a company. And then you have unrestricted access to most economic sectors. You can invest in any industry you can think of. Free transfer of capital, free competition, so on and so forth. Now, there are many industries in which you can invest. You know, these are just examples of the industries where there are more opportunities. I think that the most common, and it's been for many years, is mining. Mining, there's billions of dollars investment in that industry. But I think that the two industries that I like to mention is tourism and real estate. In the case of tourism, which is a big industry for Peru, last year we got 2.6 million visitors. And the projections for growth are an average of 13% in the next few years. That has created a demand for new infrastructure. And also the tourist has changed, the profile of the tourist. A few years ago, 7 years ago, the profile of a tourist was backpacker. A backpacker that will spend an average of $1,000 per trip. Today, it's different. The average tourist spend about $4,000 per trip. So there's higher-end tourism in Peru. And so there is a demand for new five-star hotels. You see this expansion of five-star hotels in Lima and Cusco mainly, and other parts of the country as well. In fact, if you look at the projects that are in place right now up to 2015, you'll see there is $2 billion of investments that will take place in the next 3 years, primarily tourist infrastructure. The second industry that is actually is the one that moving the growth of the Peruvian economy is the real estate. There is a deficit of housing in Peru, 25% of households, and that has created a pretty innovative ways of providing affordable housing. And we have not adopted other programs like in Venezuela or Ecuador or Bolivia, in which the state pretty much subsidizes 100% housing. We have a partnership with the private sector because I think we will send the wrong signals to Peruvians if we start giving out houses for free. That's not good. So what we're doing is a partnership with the private sector. People can buy an apartment of 700 to 800 square feet for $20,000, $25,000 at very low interest rate. And this is, the interest rates are subsidized by the government, but it's the way in which the state provides support for affordable housing. And you see this happening all over Peru, which, and I think in that industry there is a great greater opportunities for all kinds of size of investments. Now, these are the projects that are in place right now of investments, total $31 billion, of which half of that will go to the mining industry, then hydrocarbons, electricity, manufacturing, infrastructure, and other sectors, which include the $2 billion on tourist infrastructure. So that tells you how attractive Peru is. That tells you how much interest there is in Peru. And this is just the picture up to next year. You know, we're still working on a new project. We're doing investment shows. We just had one in San Francisco in January, in New York and Chicago. We're going to Dubai, to Madrid, and to Frankfurt in May. And we're going to Asia in November, I believe. So we're going outside. We're going to, around the world to sell all these projects that Peru has. And we're doing this with the private sector hand in hand. It's not just a government-run program, but actually the leadership of these investment rounds that we're doing around the world, it's led by the private sector. These are just some of the logos from international companies that have invested in Peru. A lot of them are from the United States. Some are from Spain, from Chile, from Brazil, a couple of big ones from Brazil. So just to give you an idea, the type of companies that are investing in Peru. Market access. Okay, when an investor, when you make a case for a country, you know, okay, you have the wonderful macroeconomics indicators, you know, your political is stable, you have investment grade, wonderful. But what I care for is how profitable can it be, my investment can be in your country. Peru is a country of 29 million people, so it's a small market. You know, I don't want, how do I justify to invest, let's say, and put in a manufacturing plant of, I don't know, T-shirts to sell just to Peruvians? I want to make sure that I can sell outside Peru. And that's when the trade agreements work. You know, we have signed trade agreements with all these countries. Actually, with Europe, it's not in gray because the trade agreement with the European Union already came into effect about 2 weeks ago. And so we have 20 new seven countries as part of this trade agreements we have signed. But Peru, you know, when you look at the entire region, you want to have access to the markets surrounding Peru. So we have a trade agreement with we're part of the Andean community. We have an agreement in Mercosur. So that means we have duty-free access to these markets. So that's another good argument for an investor. Okay, you not only will sell to Peruvians, but you can sell to the rest of Latin America or South America, for that matter. 96% of Peruvian exports to the world enter foreign markets duty-free because of these trade agreements. And if you combine the population of all the countries in which we have trade agreements, they total 4 billion people. So I think we have a pretty good coverage in terms of market access. We continue to work new trade agreements. You know, we're working right now with Australia, with New Zealand, with some of the Central American countries, you know, Brunei. It's part of the Trans-Pacific Agreement that we're working with Chile and the United States as well. So I think that trade agreements are fundamental when it comes to promoting investment as well. The trade agreement between Peru and the United States, the negotiations began in 2002. There were 13 rounds. It took 13 rounds to complete this negotiation. Compared to other negotiations that took place, for instance, between the United States and Chile, we did it in 3 years, and they did it in seven. We learned a lot from the process that Chile went through, and it was faster. Even the USTR also, you know, they had it was the first big trade agreement with a Latin American country besides Mexico, NAFTA. So I think we used those experiences to make this process a lot faster. In fact, the trade agreement that was signed in Peru and the United States had 21 chapters. It was the most comprehensive trade agreement we've ever signed as a country. And we use that agreement as a model for other trade agreements we have signed with other countries. The interesting thing of all this process, you know, it was signed by the executive. They went to Congress, and Peruvian Congress, the U.S. Congress. When it went to the U.S. Congress, that's when we started having problems. It took a while for the agreement to pass because there was so much politics involved, you know. The labor unions, they were opposed. The Democrats didn't want to approve something that labor unions were against. So it took us a while to make the message across, and we even had to hire a lobbying company to help us, you know, in this process. Senator Hatch from Utah was an incredible supporter of this agreement. And in fact, he was one of the key players that make it happen. Senate and actually the entire Congress. So we're very thankful for it. And finally, the agreement, even though it was approved in 2007 in Senate, it was the end of the process, the approval process. It took 2 years to implement it because the trade agreement became the law of the land in the United States and the law of the land in Peru as well. So what happened is both countries had to adapt their legal system to make sure that there were no contradictions between the agreement and internal, the domestic law. So now the question is, okay, we signed this trade agreement, but why did we sign? Why did the United States sign an agreement with a country like Peru? Every trade relationship should be both ways. So both parties should benefit from it. Something that I should explain to you is that for many years, Peru had benefited from a program that's called the ATPDEA. It was a program, a unilateral program, that the U.S. government provided free access, free duty access to the Andean countries, which was Colombia, Bolivia, Ecuador, and Peru. It's from 1991 till 2009. So, but at the same time, U.S. goods were entering this market paying duties, or sometimes 17%, sometimes 12%, 5%, 6%, depending on the product that we're talking about. But the trade agreement, what the trade agreement did, you know, it opened or liberalized access to 90% of U.S. goods into the Peruvian market, a benefit they did not have before, and we did have for 18 years. What the trade agreement did for us, it expanded the number of products that we could enter the U.S. market duty-free, and it made it permanent because the ATPDA had to be approved by Congress every so often, approved and revised. And so this agreement has helped us to make this permanent. This is the result of the trade agreement. This is before the trade was put into place. There was, you know, $664 million in favor of Peru, 2012, $1.6 billion in favor of the United States. So if you look at who benefited the most in terms of numbers, in terms of trade, the United States exporting more to Peru than we are selling to the United States. It's interesting for me because I remember the arguments that came out of Congress when they were opposing to sign the agreement. We're saying because signing an agreement with Peru would have threatened the U.S. industry. And the truth of the matter is that out of the total U.S. exports, imports from the world, only 0.18% are imports from Peru. That's nothing. So the impact's zero. There's just no argument right there. And the best evidence is this. You know, I think the U.S. has benefited greatly from this agreement. Someone asked me yesterday, okay, well, this is great for the U.S., but why is it great for Peru? Why did you sign an agreement with the United States if you're not benefiting from it? No, we definitely are benefiting from it. Because I said, if you recall one of the graphs that I shown about exports, I said that 23% are value-added exports from Peru to the U.S. Well, what we're doing right now is, like I said, we try to change our dependency on commodities, one that being more value-added, and the access to the market is there. So eventually, we may be able to revert this trend right now. But it will take time. So it's long-term. It's not a short-term result. That's the way we look at it. The other thing is, as I said earlier, you know, it has to be a two-way street, you know. And I think this is the best example that the trade agreement is working in both sides. There are other chapters in the agreement. And one of them is cooperation and capacity building. So we're getting a lot of aid from the United States to get capacity building in many areas that involve investment, labor, environment. So it's not just market access. There's many dimensions of a trade agreement that most people not familiar with and don't understand it. But I think for us, this is the best way to show, in this for my job, what I do here is to show in the U.S. that, yeah, you've benefited from it. you know, very, very quickly, actually. This is what we sell and we buy. We sell minerals, as I said, coffee. We sell a lot of coffee to the United States. We sell a lot of asparagus. In fact, we are the number one exporter of asparagus into the United States. Grapes, artichokes, I believe in processed artichokes, we're number two. Grapes growing really rapidly as well. Textiles, apparel, non-metallic mining, and fuels. And the products that we buy from the United States, automobiles, wheat, fuels, lubricants, capital goods for industry. So if you see these two tables, you'll see that we complement each other. We don't compete with each other. You know, we buy and sell different things. And so, and that's the beauty of this trade agreement. We're not affecting each other's industries. When we negotiated a trade agreement with China, we did not negotiate a 21-chapter agreement. There is no way that we could have done that with China. China is a country that we must take steps, one step at a time. And so the trade agreement we have with China is partial. You know, we have not opened the entire market for them. You know, we're, like I said, we're doing step by step. And so your negotiation depends on the market, depends on the size, depends on which industries are sensitive or not. And so the final agreement depends on all that, all those variables that are part of the decision making. I couldn't come to Utah and not mention Utah and all this, you know, process. We looked into, okay, what does Utah sell to the world? You know, a lot of minerals, I would say. We looked at the top 30 countries, and Peru is not among the top 30 countries, that because we're a mineral country, we export minerals. So, but we look, okay, what do we sell to Utah? And we sell $1.1 billion of minerals to Utah, mainly gold, silver, and copper. That's what we sell to Utah. So there is some evidence of a relationship between Peru and the state of Utah. It was hard to find it, I should say. Peru's exportable offer, it's everywhere in the world, in every continent. In particular with the United States, Peru has introduced from 2009 and 2012 508 new products, 96 of them value-added, manufactured goods. So that's what's going on with Peru. Peru is moving rather quickly, rather fast in bringing value-added products. And we've been able to diversify our exports because let's say, 10 years ago, about 53% of our exports came to the United States. Now only 13%. Because we imagine if we had been exporting to the United States that much during the crisis. This would have been terrible for Peru, but we have diversified and we are everywhere. The main exporting industries for us, non-traditional, so value-added agriculture. In 2012, we exported almost $5 billion, mainly coffee, asparagus, grapes, avocados, big on avocados. We just started bringing avocados 2 years ago to the United States to have a very good impact, a very positive reception, I must say. It took us 7 years to approve a protocol that would enable Peruvian avocados to enter the market. Because when we signed the agreement, an agreement would never include sanitary and phytosanitary protocols that will allow you to come into the market. Those are separate processes that you have to go through. Then the fishing industry in 2012 was almost $3.5 billion, out of which the majority is fish oil, fish meal, and from direct consumption we bring scallops, prawns, shrimp, mahi-mahi. Those are the main products that we bring to the United States. apparel is a big industry for us, $2 billion of exports. I'm sure you're familiar with all these brands. Peru is known as a sourcing country. So we provide services to many of these brands. You know, and Peru, of course, is in a higher-end niche market. We cannot compete with China. So we try to work with companies that are looking for higher-end products. We have, as you see, you know, Polo, Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, Abercrombie, and, you know, all those big brands. Lacoste, I would say, is the most emblematic company that does sourcing in Peru. They do a lot of sourcing in Peru. They've been doing it for a long time. Abercrombie and Fitch as well. Polo is going to Asia now more than before. You can tell the quality of their products have gone down, unfortunately. But that's what, you know, during the financial crisis, the apparel business changed completely. You know, it was not so much quality; it was price. The priority was price, and Peru could not compete with a lot of these other suppliers. But we don't care. We wanna remain to be a country that is known as a sourcing country for quality products, especially because we have Pima cotton, which is a very expensive cotton, and we have alpaca fiber, a very fine fiber. So we couldn't even pretend to compete with China. We don't want to compete with them anyways. So, and then the other important export industry for us, which is traditional export, is mining. We export iron, lead, gold, silver. Peru is the number one producer of silver in the world, and the fourth, I believe, in copper. So we're talking about almost $30 billion of exports a year. And I want to show you a little video that will summarize what I just said, to complement what I said.
Peru is a country of creative individuals. Since the dawn of its history, Peruvians have been inspired by what they experienced in nature to express that creativity in their art, their joy of life through their dances, and their warmth and hospitality in the delicious food they serve at their tables. Peru is rapidly becoming a topic of conversation in the world for having one of the fastest growing economies in the region, driven by its hardworking people who are world-renowned for their initiative and achievements. Thanks to the high-quality goods we are producing through the use of state-of-the-art technology, our exports have been sharply rising over the past decade and hold the promise of sustained growth in the coming years. We are a country with 200 miles of rich territorial waters, teeming with more than 2,500 species. And more of them are finding their way into the international market on a daily basis. We are a country with an ancient textile tradition that is based on such luxurious fibers as alpaca and vicuña, not to mention Pima and Tanguis cotton varieties. Such raw materials are significant reasons why our garment industry surpasses the highest international standards of quality. Our talent and quality of service are also made manifest in the work of our artisans who, through unparalleled creativity, know how to adapt their art to the needs of today as well as to create new and different expressive outlets, much sought after in the world abroad. Today, Peru is touted as one of the most attractive destinations for foreign investment. Peru is a complete adventure. The perfect blend of the exotic and history, combining dreamlike natural settings with awe-inspiring buildings that are the legacy of our ancestors. We are a country that has invented world-famous exquisite food. We are also a modern, creative nation that is progressing through the efforts of its people and numerous investors from all corners of the globe. Peru is waiting for you to visit. Peru, it's all the rage.
Okay, well, that's the story about the country, as I said at the beginning. In the 1980s, was in the middle of a civil war because of terrorism. In only 20 years, we have been able to accomplish all this amazing growth. Of course, it took us 10 years for reforms over our economic legal framework and starting to the year 2000, that's when we started to enjoy all this growth. And I think the prospects for Peru are pretty positive. We're still working with some many changes we must undertake. Even though we're doing great, we still have a lot to go. We still have almost 28% of poverty level. So there is a lot to do still. But I think if we continue making the right decisions, I think we're going to be able to accomplish, you know, the goals that we have set out for ourselves. Thank you for listening to me, and if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Peterson. I have a question. How do you envision the future with all this economic growth in Peru towards the quality of living for a whole as a country in Peru, for all the people?
Well, I think I touched about that a little bit. One of the things that I said is that the greatest threat for Peru is not to ensuring that we improve the quality of living of every Peruvian. And so what the priority is right now for the government is there's large investments in social programs and education and health and in the redistribution of this wealth that I talked about. Also, we need to create the right environment to increase employment, because it's the only way we're going to be able to create opportunities for Peruvians. I think when I show that map about the retail expansion in Peru, I think that's a pretty good idea of how much the quality of life of Peruvians have improved in the last few years. Right? And so all these nice figures are great, but in the long term, if we don't do these other things that I just mentioned, social issues, we don't address those social issues, I don't think we're going to be able to be successful in the long time. So the good thing about the sustainability of Peru is that in the past, we always had one of our greatest weaknesses was the political politicians in Peru, the political class. That political class has matured. The political class has changed. The political class has understood that in order for us to continue growth, we need to build upon the success of the previous administrations. And that's been happening for the last 20 years. So I think there's been an important growth in that direction. And I think the process for our positives, as long as we continue implementing these programs, and as long as we continue making efforts to reduce poverty, and as long as politicians continue to build upon the success. So I hope I did answer your question.
Hi, my name is Zal Faisal. I have a question. What are the main factors that's holding Peru from growing economically between other countries in the same population of Peru?
There's
competing with them.
that is holding Peru?
What is the main factors that holding Peru from growing economically and to compete with other countries with the same population of Peru?
Holding, you say holding. They're holding, preventing Peru from
growing economically.
Okay, well, I think Peru is growing economically all right. I think they've been doing it for 12 years now, an average 6%, which is pretty good. As I said, when you look at a country, there are many, many factors that have to be in place for growth to be sustainable. When we look at ourselves, we have to look at ourselves in comparison to the rest of, let's say, the region, countries that are pretty similar to us in terms of culture, in terms of size of the economy, in terms of size of the population. And I think we have been pretty successful in making sure that we adopt the right policies. You know, if you know what's been going on in the region, you have two directions in South America primarily. You have the countries that have adopted market economic policies, and you have the other wing that have gone more to the left, you know, led by former President Chavez. Countries like Bolivia, countries like Ecuador have followed that path, and they're not doing very well. Peru went the other way. Peru have continued implementing market economic policy. And I think the growth that Peru has experienced, as I have shown, has contributed to get attention. We're a small country with 29 million people. I don't think we could have not been able to accomplish this growth if we did not attract investment. We need investment. The two pillars of Peru's growth is exports and investment. And so, I think we've been pretty successful. I think I've shown that. And the process, I said, the prospects, the projections for Peru are 6% up to the year 2016, and I think those are pretty solid. We're going to have this government up to 2016. There won't be any changes. I think there will not be any major changes in the policies that have been implemented. So I think that at least until the next election, the country will continue to grow. When I saw the graph of the projections, if you remember, in 2009, we had a growth of 0.9%. But that was the year right after the financial crisis. We were the only country in Latin America that had positive growth. Everyone else had negative growth. So that tells you how healthy the Peruvian economy is. So I don't know if I answer your question, but I...
Do you think corruption is a new
factor? Oh, yeah, of course. There's corruption everywhere. I think that the judicial system has been gone through two reforms so far in the last 20 years. And there's still some corruption, like everywhere else. But when it comes to the legal framework and the judicial system in relation to the corporate life that is that the source of our growth, I think we're doing very well. I think over there the rules are pretty clear and the courts are, you know, going along those clear rules, you know. But, of course, there's corruption. As I said at the end, you know, we still have a long way to go still.
Okay, my name is Mauricio Lopez. Thank you for being here today. Hello. I am from Lima, Peru.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Right now, as we know, copper and gold are the main Peruvian exports. And these are primary products, primary goods. Is there a specific plan in the near future to move towards the export of manufactured goods?
Well, I did mention that, too, in my presentation. There are many projects. You find those projects in the agricultural industry and the fishing industry and the apparel industry. Those are the three main value-added industries for export for Peru. As part of my job, we're doing a lot of investing a lot of time and resources to promote Peru as a destination for investment on those industries. And there is a lot of tax incentives for investment on those industries, you know, to attract foreign investment. But we have Peruvian companies themselves that also invest in themselves. There are going to be 10,000 new hectares of new land for food. Peru will become pretty soon a very important source for food to the world. You know, Peru, the ability of Peru to expand its agricultural it's amazing. So we're doing work in agriculture, like I said. We're doing work in fishing. We're doing work in apparel, in other industries like the wood industry as well. You know, we have a new forestry law. There is providing incentives as well to develop that industry. You know, we only export $600 million, while Chile exports over $3 billion, and they don't have the amount of wood that we do have. Of course, everything has to be sustainable. You know, and there is a new environmental law in Peru because of the trade agreement with the United States. So, yes, there is a lot of efforts out there. And the proof of what I just said is the increase of value-added exports to the world. It's been steady growth since the year 2002. So,
yes, hello. My name is Isaac. I had a question kind of along those lines, too, you know, as far specific policies that the government of Peru has in place to promote the growth of economic sectors that export value-added products. And I think you already answered that right now. But one example that actually is coming from Chile, and I think is very smart in that sense, and it's basically addressing the need to increase the know-how transfer of technology, the importing of basically professionals in the education field to improve the quality of education in Peru. And they have just hired, as a result of the crisis in Europe, a lot of university professors, say, from Spain, to go to Chile and to enhance and improve the quality of education there, which is also already one of the top education systems in Latin America. So my question is there something similar that Peru is addressing or has in place to attract the visiting or coming or encourage the import of know-how of technology or an education sector, like, you know, the hiring of professors or professionals from outside of Peru?
Actually, this government, I've been in the United States for 5 years, so I also served the previous administration. So, but I can tell you with this government, if you look at history in Peru, for the first time in the history of Peru, they have created a program, a scholarship program, for Peruvians to study abroad, paid off by the state. That's never happened before. So that's one example of what we're trying to do to bring knowledge. We need knowledge. We're going to have this growth sustainable in time if we don't have the technology, if we don't have the human resources necessary to keep this growth. So there is a great investment in education. And one example is this program to incentivize Peruvians, young Peruvians, to study abroad, you know, paid by the state. So I think that not only includes undergrad, but also includes graduate school and exchange with different universities. So education is right up there in the lead right now. It's a priority number one.
Please join me in thanking Ricardo Romero for an excellent informative forum.